Welcome to the Ocean Optimism Podcast. Immerse yourself in the inspiring stories of ocean conservation successes and solutions as we interview scientists, activists, and leaders from diverse backgrounds who are revolutionizing the future of our ocean. Their captivating tales will challenge your perceptions and ignite your belief that you too can make a difference. Our goal is to fuel your passion for the ocean, broaden your horizons, and empower you to have a meaningful impact on our ocean. We provide pathways for you to contribute and explore proven strategies and initiatives that have already driven positive change. I'm your host, Ellen Spooner, a scientist turned storyteller. Let's dive into this ocean optimism journey. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce our next Ocean Optimism guest, Dr. Juele Vitayaki, an internationally esteemed scientist based in Fiji. Dr. Vitayaki currently serves as the Blue Prosperity Fiji Advisor for Science, Community Engagement, and Cultural Aspects, as well as the co-primary investigator for Fiji's largest ocean science expedition. Dr. Vitayaki's distinguished career includes serving as an associate professor of marine studies at the University of the South Pacific and was acting campus director at USP's campus in Samoa. As a testament to his far-reaching influence, Dr. Vitayaki holds the honor of being a member of the panel of experts for a sustainable ocean economy assembled by the World Resource Institute. Furthermore, Dr. Juele is also a co-author of the book Living from the Sea, Cultural and Marine Conservation in Fiji, which showcases his commitment to bridging the gap between traditional and modern ways of living. Notably, Dr. Vitayaki has been a driving force behind many of the community-based initiatives in his home of now network of islands. With his expert coordination skills, he has successfully brought together development partners and the 16 villages of the Nau Island to protect their environment and ensure the sustainable use of their resources. Dr. Vitayaki's roots run deep in rural Nau Island, Fiji. It is from this grounding that he has been able to bridge the gap between traditional and modern ways of living, a feat he credits to his upbringing. His connection to his homeland and its people have fueled his passion for conservation and inspired his tireless efforts to create positive change. His education and work have taken him from the humble shores of his hometown to places he had previously only seen in movies. Dr. Vitayaki stands as a living testament to the power of dedication, humility, and service, constantly expressing his gratitude for the opportunity to serve his family, village, and Fiji, and indeed the world. Join me in welcoming Dr. Vitayaki. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
So for our first question, I wanted to ask you of what brought your interest in ocean conservation?
Well, thank you very much. That's a wonderful question. I grew up in the village and learned or was taught to fish from a young age. It was always interesting that our next meal would depend on how successful we were with our last fishing trip. So if we caught plenty, then we would have a nice feast and, of course, enough to share with relatives and neighbors. But if there was none, often we go home with long faces, with all kinds of excuses about why we did not catch as much as we had expected to catch. And we would be ridiculed, even by family members, that we were unsuccessful at the task of securing fish for our food. At the time, the main focus of fishing was for subsistence. So from that early age, I got to appreciate the fact that if we are successful with our fishing, we have some decent meal to share as a family and with others that we often have to share with. But if we don't, then we go with some poorer alternatives, maybe vegetables and and just hot tea and cassava. So the lesson was that, yes, both food sources are like in the marine environment are there. You have to collect them. And for that to happen, the timing is to be right. We have to have the skills to allow us to secure and acquire those food sources that test our skills and our competencies in understanding the organisms and the resources that are out there to be harvested, only if we are smart enough to outsmart our prey.
And how successful were you in outsmarting your prey?
And there were times when we come back with good catches, but it was always a sign of how good you are as a fisher if you continue to come back with catches every time you go out there. But yeah, I certainly can testify to the fact that sometimes we came back empty-handed. We would blame the eventuality on the weather or poor gear or going to the wrong location. Depletion of resources was not a challenge at that time as it is today, because we now got to know a lot better of the process that is in place in the ocean. And that's where we are today.
Speaking of depleting resources in Fiji, I was wondering if you could share with our audience, what are some of the biggest issues facing the ocean in Fiji right now?
Well, as I was saying, the resources are depleting for a number of reasons. Those resources is one important point. There's just too much fishes chasing after too few fish. And that has gotten worse over the years because local communities, like the one I grew up in, our focus at the time was just to feed ourselves. But today, fishes in that same position I was in 40 years ago, some of them basically are fishing in order to sell to the market.
Hey, so I want to clarify something that Dr. Joelle just said. We were recording this interview over Zoom, and sometimes the internet would cut out. But essentially what he just said is that instead of back in the day when he would go fishing just to provide food for his family, communities now have to not only fish for providing sustenance to their family, but also to sell that fish to the market to gain some money for their family. Now back to the interview.
Well, the food sources are of income for some of our people, and that has put a lot of pressure on the resources that are being used. In addition, the marine environment is changing rapidly through all kinds of causes. Pollution is increasingly getting more and more intense and permanent. We have alteration of habitats.
So it sounds like Fijians used to mostly fish for sustenance to feed themselves, their family, and their community. But that has recently changed. So now they fish to sell it to the market. And that has contributed to the decline in some of the fish stocks around Fiji. Is that correct?
Yes. In the past, as I was saying when I was growing up, all of our fishing was just for local food supply. We had a lot to share with our relatives. Today, I'm sad to say that in a lot of cases, what used to be reserved just for local food consumption is now being shared with markets that are far, far bigger than the capacity of the resources within our coastal fisheries to support. So that's the reason why fisheries resources are getting more and more scarce.
And so what do you think has caused that shift in why people are fishing for no longer themselves and their community, but now for broader markets?
In a way, it's the nature of fishing because for agriculture, you have to plant something and then look after it for months, maybe years before you can harvest. Whereas with fishing, if you are successful today, you start to earn today. And this point was well illustrated during COVID, when people lost their source of livelihood in hotels, in other urban-based areas of work. A lot of them returned to their villages and went straight into fishing because they could earn money by the end of a day if they are good enough. They don't even have to own the equipment or the fishing gear. They can go borrow somebody else's get the proficient. If they are good at it, they will return with something to bring home either for food or to sell. In other instances, people do have forms of fishing that does not really allow or does not need equipment. So they have some pests, traps and fences, traditional knowledge that people utilize to secure catches. So those were the kinds of things that changed. And sadly, as I said, today, a lot more people combine both farming and fishing. So they fish whenever short-term income is needed, and then go back to tendering for their crops for longer-term supply, long-term source of livelihood.
So it seems that the switch from subsistence fishing to provide for their livelihoods happened largely out of necessity to basically provide for their families and themselves.
Yes, and it's sort of it evolved organically because, you know, it was not often properly organized. So it seems to me it's always a case of fishing activities being undertaken first and then the attempts to introduce management arrangements. These are reactionary as people begin to realize that maybe things are changing for the worse because of extended usage.
So speaking of management, what are some of the solutions to this problem? How are local communities in Fiji finding ways to provide for their livelihood in a way that doesn't extract too many fish from their coastal regions?
Well, it's a basic management management rationale, reasoning that if there is too much effort, you have to reduce that effort in order to ensure that the supply is spared for the future. But basically, it's the basis of resource management. Whatever the resource, we need to use it in such a way that we acknowledge, in fact, be guided by the capacity of the resource to cater for usage, have some form of total allowable catch level that is agreed to by all of the stakeholders to be used. But even that requirement demands that we have some good understanding of the resource rate at which it is reproducing, so that we then can determine a level a complex arrangement. And this is where the problem lies. It's easy to say, okay, let's stay away from an area because we need to ensure we have continued supply for today and for the future. Enforcement of that management decision often is a challenge. In the past, when the customary management and order was much more organized and well respected, things were different. Today, the management responsibility often lies with the state. And of course, the state is not present in all of the outer islands of different countries like Fiji, that consist of multiple islands. So it becomes a very, very complex, quite difficult to understand process, and that basically is what is happening today. Poaching continues to take place, even in places where government has formalized the management of certain resources. There is illegal fishing activity. There is unrecorded catches that make management of the resources very difficult.
And I've heard in some other countries of coastal communities implementing locally managed marine areas. And I was wondering if that has been implemented in any places within Fiji, or if any communities have found ways to overcome these challenges and shown progress.
Yes, thanks for that question. And well, please remember that this customary practice of resource management, our people understood that we cannot harvest more than we have, and that we cannot harvest at rates that are greater than the rate at which the resources replenish itself. So, yeah, we salute them for that, because they know that if they were to have the resource use sustained, they need to cut down on their use of the resources from time to time, depending on the state of the fishery. But that customary practice is now often ignored by the commercial fishers, who often are not from the community itself. So the community members may be observing resource management practices, but people who live outside of their communities but have rights to fish in those fishing grounds because they have the licenses, they often are not aware of these customary arrangements being taken by the local people to ensure sustained use of their resources. So the system is quite confused. It's a bit hard to understand. And I'm sad to say that in a lot of cases, it is the commercial users who now threaten resource management being undertaken by the resource owners, and most of them live in coastal communities.
So have you seen any situations or examples where the local resource owners have found a way to address the problem of, sounds like maybe commercial fishing, overfishing, or any sort of efforts that you see are making progress to address this problem?
Yes, this what we refer to now as locally managed marine areas. These are initiatives undertaken by local communities who safeguard their own interests to ensure that their food sources are being protected so that their future generations may also have access to these resources. That is well known right across the Pacific. The problem, however, is that in a lot of cases, commercial operators who often come from outside of the communities themselves, they often do not know, they do not really want to know that these arrangements are taking place in coastal communities. So in a lot of initiatives now being taken, local communities are trying to attract partners that they can work with who can then help them address the problem and take it out to those that are outside of the community, stakeholders that are outside the communities, but they have interests and rights given those that have applied for licenses and have secured those are the stakeholders that they now have to work with to ensure the effective management of their coastal fisheries resources.
And so is there an example of a community that you are aware of who has engaged with some of these external stakeholders that have helped them address the commercial fishing issues?
Well, there's lots of examples across Fiji and across the Pacific. Thankfully, in a lot of the communities that have undertaken resource management, they have partners, often non-government organizations, some well-known international NGOs, such as WWF and World Wildlife Fund Nature, WCS, World Conservation Center, the IUCN, International Union of Conservation. The problem continued to be undermined by the ability of these people that are basically working often illegally to help themselves to the resources owned by coastal communities.
And so in some of these communities that have partnered with IUCN or WWF, what have they seen progress being made in those areas where they have those external partnerships?
In a lot of ways, yes. For that kind of determination, of course, you have to rely on assessments being done. And I think there was a recent one where the Laos escape. I think it's organized by Conservation International that covers the one of the districts of Fiji, one of the main maritime provinces, Lau, the Lau Seascape. They have undertaking resource management activities and are progressing into areas the activities that are quite revolutionary in that they are new, much larger scale. But for those kinds of initiatives, you need to have a nice partner that has the resources, that can secure the resources to undertake those kinds of fishing activities.
Wow, they're implementing revolutionary practices. I'm curious, what are some of those practices? What are lessons learned that other communities can take from this partnership between the Lao communities and Conservation International?
Well, I mean, one of the first things that need to be recognized and understood is the ability of the community of the communities involved to act, to organize them, to take action, and that's difficult because people live in different islands. I mean, the Lao group covers at least maybe a fifth of the area of the country, and most of that area is covered by or connected by ocean, Pacific Ocean. So yeah, for them, coming from different islands, coming from different villages within those islands, working together for a common purpose, that's a challenge in itself. And then they have to make sure that they organize the activities of commercial fishers that have interest in fishing in, say, Lao waters, different parts of it, the kind of activities that they undertake. So then, with these concerns, you talk about the problem of monitoring, exerting effective control over what is to be done. So these are huge responsibilities for communities that often don't have financial resources, even just to have a patrol boat or to set up a communication network that would allow them to report on things unbecoming taking place in their realm. So these are the kinds of issues that are now being faced. IUU is a problem anywhere in the world, but in developing countries in the a lot more difficult to handle and manage than in other places.
And just to clarify for our listeners, IUU is illegal, unregulated, and unmanaged fishing, correct?
Illegal, unrecorded, and unregulated.
Unregulated. Yeah,
so
okay.
In a lot of cases, licensed fishers may not report accurately what they're taking out of the resource of the fishing ground. That's unrecorded. They may be owners of license, but they don't perform as they should be. And unregulated are those resources that are often new, that have not been regulated before the usage is mainstreamed. So always you tend to see management catching up with what is being done in terms of the use of their fisheries resources.
But it sounds like in the Lao region with Conservation International, they've made some progress at least towards addressing some of these issues. Is that correct?
Yes, and the same was being realized in Maduata when WWF worked for about 20 years in that province. But now things are not as active as they were, say, 10 years ago. Things are beginning to take on a totally different outlook because poaching has increased a lot more, illegal acts. I was fortunate to be in Lambasa, the northern town, about 2 weeks ago, and we were taken by fisheries to have a look at 59 gas tanks that were confiscated just over one night of raid by the enforcement officers that the division, fisheries division, and their partners in the northern division now have been placed. So that is the level at which illegal activities are being undertaken in an environment where the islands are far flung, where the extensive areas of fishing ground is what is available. So yeah, it's tough to exert effective control over those kinds of areas, which makes management basically quite difficult.
But it seems with a potentially renewed energy and effort towards these issues, there are solutions that can be taken, right?
Of course. I mean, we can't really lose hope in this battle. We have to find better ways of doing the work more effectively, more efficiently. It has to be cost effective. So that's the challenge today, is to put together partnerships that would be able to work effectively together. We'll make sure that the interests of the owners of the resources, of the marine environment itself, that these are being considered in serious ways.
And speaking of partnerships, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about the Blue Prosperity Fiji program and how that may provide some solutions to some of the issues that we've discussed.
Thank you very much. Well, the Blue Prosperity Fiji initiative is one of the popular topics discussions in Fiji today, because of the potential that it promises to bring to the country. Blue Prosperity Fiji is a partnership between the Fiji government, which are being led in this instance by the Ministry of Fisheries, the Itauke Affairs, the Prime Minister's office, which houses the climate change unit of the Fijian government, and the Ministry of Environment. They are being joined by the partnership of non-government organizations that are in Fiji, and by the Waite Institute, a US-based organization. So Blue Prosperity Fiji, or that partnership that involved those partners I've just named, their main responsibility is to help Fiji with its commitment under Fiji's National Ocean Policy to sustainably manage all of its waters, all of its maritime territory, and to protect 80% of the same area. So 100% sustainable management and 50% protection. So that's what Blue Prosperity is about. And at the moment, we're thankful to our partners, particularly to the Wade Institute and Fiji Fisheries and the Tauke Affairs Ministry for the science expedition that is about to launch its second leg. There will be three legs in the scientific exploration being planned to allow Fiji to have the first of the ocean assessment, national ocean assessment to be undertaken. So that's a huge progress, but it would allow Fiji and the partners that I mentioned to collect collate information that they can be put into a database to be the basis of a marine spatial planning service. That service we hope would help decision makers arrive at options that are most effective for the use of certain areas and of certain marine resources. In addition to our marine spatial planning, or to improving the capacity for marine spatial planning as the basis for decision making, the hope of Blue Prosperity Fiji, or the focus of the Blue Prosperity Fiji, is to also ensure the sustainable use of the fisheries resources within the Fiji group, and lastly, to support all avenues of global economy, economic development, sustainable use of the marine environment, the biggest resource base. A lot of the island nations like Fiji that are scattered over the world's largest ocean.
So it sounds like to me some of the key solutions to addressing some of these problems are partnership and bringing in outside organizations that can help Fijian communities combat some of the overfishing that may be happening in their coastal communities. And another solution is just access to more information about how the fisheries are doing so that better decisions can be made. And it sounds like a lot of that is happening with Blue Prosperity Fiji. So with all of that, what makes you optimistic about the future of the ocean in Fiji?
Well, space is what we have plenty of. And when you think about the small populations that we have in a lot of our island countries in the region, the weak economies, is not very good for effectively controlling this expense, huge expense of marine environment and the resources that are hidden underneath this. So yes, partnerships are critical for us, but I think realistically, it's also not very easy for small island countries, often that rely on very few commonly shared resources, such as fisheries. It's hard to attract partners, good partners. And let's face it, doing effective control over your maritime zone is not exactly cheap. A lot of our countries don't have research vessels. We don't. There are very few countries that have navies, and our navy or our naval forces don't have the capacity sometimes to go on to go with a with go out to the edge of the maritime zone without having to refuel because the patrol boats are small. So we have to deploy extra fuel in outer islands, logistical arrangements. So, to attract partners to come help us is challenging in these circumstances. So, for that, we really are grateful to the non-government organizations over the years, because they have accounted for most of the work being done, and for the current, for the moment, we're not just funding the assessment that is now being underway, that's under going on at the moment, but also it's in its commitment to helping ensure that it works with Fiji and some of the other Pacific Island countries where they are already working, such as Samoa, Tonga, Vanuatu, Marshall Islands, and the FSM. The hope is that these partnerships can lay the groundwork for more effective management based on well researched and well established guidelines. We want to emphasize good scientific methods for undertaking the survey that would allow us to put together the kinds of information that we need to collect and manage to help us with the management of our marine resources.
Wow. So in the face of all of these challenges, with the hope of continuing partnerships, what motivates you to continue fighting and continue working to protect the ocean? What keeps you optimistic about the future?
Well, I think the fact that we are doing what we can. No action is not an option. We know we are small countries with limited resources, but we have to stake our claim, and we have to defend our allocations, because these marine resources and the marine environment that surround our countries basically provide us with a lot of the resources and the supplies, and of course the means through which we can continue to live the kind of lives that we have. We have to get our supplies from Europe, from the United States, from Asia, from Australia and New Zealand to the south. So we rely on effective systems for other new resources that are coming up. There are a lot of interests in the region. For instance, some of the countries are thinking about the mining of deep seabed minerals. Others are opposed to the idea, given the threat that it can add to this huge resource base for our region. So these are the kinds of challenging in a lot of ways, contradictory ideas, possibilities that our people have to deal with in order to find what is correct, what is right for our countries and our people.
So what can somebody who may be living in Fiji but doesn't have a science background do to help address many of these challenges?
Well, I think it goes down to what resource management is about. And, you know, I always try to convince people I talk to that resource management is not about trying to organize the resources, the waves out there. We're trying to organize people. So that's why we can't lose hope, because we have to convince people that we need to act and that we have to make smart decisions. We may not have the resources to do all the things that we want to do, but we can be smart and arrive at some innovative management arrangements that are meaningful to people so that they can adhere to them. That's the challenge we have, and that's why we can't give up. We need to continue to work to find amicable solutions to allow us to ensure that we utilize the resources we have effectively, efficiently, and equitably, so that we, the generations of today, can enjoy dignified lives and also share that with future generations to come.
Wow, that's really powerful. I definitely feel inspired to continue staying involved and supporting this effort. And I actually had one last question for you. You had mentioned living dignified lives. I wonder if you could define for our listeners, what does prosperity mean to you?
Oh, interesting. You know, in the Pacific Island communities, we don't invite people to come. We always prepare to receive people when they come. So that means we have to cook more than enough what we would need, so that if there is an unannounced visitor that comes, he or she gets fed. So that for us is the yardstick. And it's basically the same in all of our communities across the Pacific. I know that in some societies I have to tell whoever I'm going to, hey, I'm coming to see you on this particular date. For us, we roll up whenever we can, because there are extensions of our family unit, of our group, in all the places that we go to through Fiji. There's a term, our Matani Katumba, or our Doa. So when I go to some place, as long as I know who I am, I should know who I'm going to when I go to some other place outside of my own. And that's the kind of social network that is provided for our people all this time. And I would hate to see it lost, because I think it has served its purpose. People get told off if there was not enough food left over after the family members have eaten by their elders, because of that obligation and that we have to be ready to be visited by relatives who need to be looked after. And so, if you follow that kind of command, this is why it is important for Pacific Islanders, in this case for Fijians, to make sure that food resources are always available for all occasions, all days.
Wow. So that's really beautiful. It sounds like prosperity means the ability to provide food for any guests that may come to your home at any time.
Yes. And if they come and I'm not prepared, people may not think highly of me.
Wow. Well, with that, I just wanted to say thank you very much. And I do think very highly of you, Dr. Joelle Viteaki. I sincerely appreciate your time. And I feel welcome. Inspired. And thank you so much.
You're welcome, ma'am.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Ocean Optimism Podcast. We wanted to extend our heartfelt thanks to our esteemed guest, Dr. Joelle Viteaki, for sharing his valuable insights and experiences within Fiji with us. His dedication to ocean conservation and preserving cultural and traditional knowledge is truly inspiring, and we're sincerely grateful for his contributions to the field of ocean conservation. To our listeners, we hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did, and that it left you feeling hopeful and motivated to play your part in preserving our ocean. Be sure to tune in to the next Ocean Optimism podcast and turn on your Apple or Spotify notifications to see when the next one comes out. We'll be continuing to explore the great world beneath the waves and continue these incredible conversations with people who are working hard to protect it. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast on your preferred platform and share it with your friends and family to spread the message of ocean optimism. You can also follow us on social media for updates and see the latest ocean conservation success stories and solutions at Ocean Optimism. Once again, thank you, Dr. Joelle, for joining us today. We look forward to having you tune in for our next episode. We'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Refix. Refix is an organic recovery drink made with 20% seawater, low in calories, and contains no added sugar. This sustainable, healthy alternative to other recovery drinks is available on Amazon. The carefully crafted formula of Refix is packed with essential minerals like magnesium, potassium, calcium, chloride, and sodium that work together to restore and replenish your body at a cellular level. Refix is also committed to reducing plastic waste, which is why they use glass bottles for their packaging. This is not only their eco-friendly nature of the brand, but it also aligns with the mission of ocean conservation and sustainability. So next time you're in need of a recovery drink after a long workout, a day at the beach, or even a surf session, give Refix a try. It's not only delicious and healthy, but it's also supporting ocean conservation and sustainability through its environmental work. Thanks again to Refix for sponsoring today's episode. Now let's dive back into the world of ocean optimism.